You're listening to A Midlife Less Ordinary, the weekly podcast giving you the lowdown on becoming a cool older dude. The good times are not a faded memory. It's time to start living them again. And here are your hosts, Wayne and Trev.
Yeah, hello and welcome back, everyone, and welcome to A Midlife Less Ordinary. I'm Wayne, and my little acting friend Trev is sitting on the sidelines waiting to come on as an extra.
I'm here for the audition.
And it's not Fake Taxi.
It's not.
No.
But I prepared all for that.
Yes, and you'd be very good,
is
it?
I've got my skimpy gear on. I've kind of got my trousers that come off really easily, and now you're telling me
you've got the job. But this episode, I think we better move on with this, Trev. This episode is actually called Life of an Actor, Act, Richard, Act. And the reason it's called that is because Life of an Actor is basically exactly what it says. We was going to get Harrison Ford to come on, but he said he'd only come on with Chewbacca. Or Chewbacca, depending on where you come from.
We haven't got room for too many hairy people on this.
And actually, that brings something up for me, Trev, with acting. Because,
what's that?
I mean, we love movies, and acting was always an episode we were going to have to do, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. So, but there's a thing about behind the mask, isn't there? You know, on a serious note, that people behind the mask, like Peter Mayhew, for example, who played Chewbacca. Yeah. He loved it, and he was part of that Star Wars universe and everything. Mm. Then you got people like Jean-Claude Van Damme, who I... No, I've got an affinity
what
for
mask,
before Scott Adkins. Predator mask.
Van Damme wear.
Predator.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yes, yes,
yes.
And, yeah, I think you're just humouring me. But it's he got uppity about it because he couldn't see his little Brussels face in Predator. I don't know what he expected.
I just got this image. Now you've said that as Van Damme as a Brussels sprout. His head as a Brussels sprout.
That would be probably better than most of his films in the last 15 years, to be fair.
Jean-Claude Van Sprout, as he's known.
The muscles from Brussels. The Brussels from the muscles. Green. Yeah.
The Brussels with muscles.
Exactly. But that brings a whole new thing about acting. But yeah, we tried to get Harrison Ford. But what we wanted to portray today in this episode and interview season is how hard it is to get into acting.
The meat and potatoes.
Yes, meat and potatoes. Don't you like two veg?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to
clarify
it. Yeah, Life of an Actor... Act, Richard, Act. The reason we've give it a subtitle of Act, Richard, Act, one is because the guy we've managed to snag today is called Richard Alloy. He's a working actor, a lot of theatre work. He's also got some movie credits to his name, Rise of the Foot Soldier 3, Pudsey the Dog, the movie, that classic that Trevor watches on repeat every day.
I got a special edition, 4K restoration.
I can believe that.
It's a criterion version of it. But going back to the acting thing, we wanted to get someone that obviously could tell us what a sort of struggle it is. Because I think to a lot of people, they see it as this big kind of glitzy.
Yeah. Red carpet.
Exactly. It's not. Yeah, it's not. 99% of actors do have to do what Richard's going to tell us about, I would have thought.
Yes.
And I think most of them probably do it for the love of it. I've got a couple of friends that are actors, and the way they talk about it, it's like it is a passion thing. They don't do that great out of it, but they don't want to give it up.
Yeah.
A bit like us doing this, you know.
Why would you think about giving this up, Trev? Is this something I don't understand? He's handing me your resignation live on air.
Exactly, yeah. I've had a better offer.
Yeah. You said that last time you was on the docks, but, you know. Yeah.
There's a lot of offers down the
docks.
There's
a
lot. You know that.
Yeah,
you
know that.
With your glass, your
glass rod
glowing.
Glowing
skills.
Yeah. Yes.
I think we're trying to show that it's not as glamorous, but you could still do it.
Yes.
You could at a certain level and meet some decent people from it.
Yeah,
I think that's the point we're trying to get across.
Exactly. So if you have any interest in acting, I think Richard Alloy can get across to you exactly what it's like, what you have to do, what you have to sacrifice to get a role in a movie, and how you can basically have a career acting throughout your life. Without further ado, I think we'll go over to Richard, who's going to talk to us about acting. I'm looking forward to this. Richard, welcome to the show.
put it. Hello, I'm Richard. Yeah,
well, you're welcome, Richard.
But, I'm pretty sure I'll be one of your biggest gremlins. Let's put it that way. let's just get that out of the way. Nice.
You didn't have a party in gremlins, did you, by the way?
I didn't. I'd love to have got that. I'd love to have got that. Yeah. Yeah. When they reboot it in about 5 years' time, I'm up for it.
You're up for it. We'll put you down for that one, Richard.
Yeah, but, I'll give Joe Danny a call because I've got his number.
Yeah. Excellent.
So to get to the meat, Richard, my first question to you would be, how did it all start for you? I mean, wasn't the casting couch, was it?
No. Oddly enough, no. that's never been too much.
Such
a
shame.
For me. If you ever see my headshot, you'll understand why. It's like, no. this bloke can't give it away. Give it away.
Is it all right to just say fake taxi just once? And
oh dear, Trevor always lowers the tone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry.
Wow. I mean, Richard, carry on.
You make one fake taxi movie and then.
He's talking about Uber, obviously. He's not talking about anything else. Yeah, that's a fake taxi.
Not going on.
Sorry. Ignore him, Richard.
How did it start for me? Well, I mean, I suppose, like a lot of people, it all depends on what your kind of access to that kind of world is, what your kind of access to art is, you know, to not to sound try and sound too poncy about it, but a lot of people I went to college with and that I've worked with, their kind of upbringing was that they were taken to the theater and they had that access to what they consider great culture. We're Essex boys. Culture's what you get on your yogurt. You know, I don't know. I mean, you guys probably found the same thing. I found myself gravitating towards film at a very early age, massively so. I mean, I like a lot of things in my life, I became pretty obsessed with it. You know, I was chasing up back catalogue of actors and directors that I enjoyed. It all started
Richard, was that because you were so into films that you got into?
The big key one for me was the moment that I realised that Han Solo and Indiana Jones was the same guy. That sounds like a joke, but you sort of look at it. Star Wars was huge for me, and then a few years later along came Raiders, and of course we had all the sequels and stuff like that, and I started getting, I thought Harrison Ford was amazing. You know, and then that grew to an appreciation of what actors can do, you know, and like a lot of people, I had my favourites. De Niro, massive for me growing up. I just loved his work very early.
What was the first film you saw him in, Richard? De Niro, can you remember?
I think my first De Niro film. Wow, now we're going back. You know, I think it probably was. I've got a suspicion it was Raging Bull, which I would have seen very young, younger than I should have been watching it. But I think it probably was that. And it was also that led me to that kind of realization that there's not just an actor, because I became a fan of Scorsese through that, and that led me to you suddenly realize there's a whole team of people that make this. These films don't just happen. You know, these actors don't just get these roles and they turn up and they do it all themselves.
Yeah, it's weird, funny that you said that, because you don't realize when you're a kid, it's just a film. You don't think about the producers, the directors. It's strange how that happens, isn't it?
I'd always sort of been like that because back in the days when it was, I used to DJ at a very early, I was a DJ mixer at a very early age, and I became more interested in the producers of the piece of music than the actual artists sometimes. You know, I was very into...
Well, you had sort of background not there straight away.
Yeah, I'd sort of be reading liner notes. And do you remember liner notes? Do you remember before downloads when we had albums and it was beautiful and it was... such a wonderful thing. But I did. Yeah. I had an interest in how the thing gets made, you know? So that kind of led me to, you know, looking at performance. And I was... I think we didn't have access to the theatre, and it didn't really hold any interest for me. But what I was watching in film and TV, that fascinated me. That really did. I was really drawn to that.
So you got no becomes, in your family?
No one. Oh. No one at all. I'd never acted. To actually tell you the story of how I became an actor, we'd be here all night. It's a very, very long story, so I'm going to have to give you the sort of truncated York Notes version of it.
But
basically, at that early age, I did nothing about it. I did nothing at all. I went straight from school and got a job in a bank at 16 years old. Fast forward 12 years, and I'm still working in the bank and, you know, trundling along, nice little social life, meeting, you know, good fun people and all that, having the odd holiday and things like that. But over the course of, I suppose, about 18 months, I had a few kind of changes of perspective, because I was in a relationship and that ended, and then I lost two people that were very close to me. And whilst I was working in the bank and, as I say, trundling along, and you kind of find this is between, say, 25 and 28 years old, I had a couple of friends
who...
very late, very late, really. People's... I'll tell you a little story on that, actually. I did come to it late. I ended up going to drama college at 28 years old. And one of the first things I learned was that the head of acting... already said that you can't teach anyone to act who's over the age of 21.
And really?
It's staggering to hear that, because at the time I was upset by it. I was sort of thinking, well, what do you mean by that? Yeah. I mean, am I too thick? Am I no longer a sponge? What is it? You know? I kind of worked out.
Why you can't act.
But you know, you do. I mean, there are actors who come to it very late in life. You know, and I did. And and I also thought that my main kind of tool as an actor, my main sort of arsenal, you know, the sort of piece of weaponry in my arsenal was my life experience. You know,
We will bleep Arsenal out, by the way, because, you know, I'm not a big fan, so that will be...
Don't bring that into tribalism here. It slipped out, sir.
Obviously, and you're lucky you can follow your passion and your dreams.
Yeah.
And be able to earn a living from doing something you love, which is not something that Trevor and myself could probably attest to.
That's a very interesting thing you say there, that about earning a living doing it, because that's where the problems come into paradise. You know, you're really... I stepped out of college three or four years later. As I say, I graduated and I went straight into two acting jobs. But as is so often the way, and I've never known an industry like it for this, everyone wants you to work for free.
Yeah, of course.
Everyone wants you to work for free. So you have to do something else. You have to have some other money coming in from somewhere.
Well, you need to do a showreel, Richard, isn't it? Obviously, and if you have to do that with free, doing it for free, then that's what you do, isn't it?
This is it. I mean, the first two jobs I had were theatre jobs. It was actually a couple of years before I got anything on film, really. They were just adverts, and I did a crime watch, stuff like that.
I've been on there plenty of times as well, Richard. It's not special.
Yeah. When I say I did a crime watch, I committed a crime. That's what I mean by that. You know?
When you were on crime watch, did you get paid for it?
Yeah, I had to do danger. I was climbing up windows into people's bedrooms, all sorts of stuff, you know. And I didn't get paid. I got paid for it, but it was indirectly. But
They didn't know they were paying you.
No, exactly. But on to question two, I think.
So, jumping into the future a bit from what you've just told us, Richard, what do you think is the best part you've ever played? Like. In any way, really. I suppose I was going to say the most demanding, maybe, or something that you really thought, this is what I'm doing it for, you know?
Well, it's funny because there's... I suppose really what it boils down to, and as I say, if you go back to my reasons for wanting to pursue acting, it's to have to have memories, to have things that I did that, you know, that I will remember for the rest of my life. I mean, I did two national tours of shows that weren't big parts for me, but the fact that I was touring Britain and going into all these lovely old theaters and really it was terrific. Yeah. And I was working with big name actors at the time, you know, and it was good. It was really, you really felt like you were part of the industry. And I think it's important
Did you feel like you'd made it kind of thing?
I suppose my outlook to it has always been, I never wanted to be the big Hollywood star actor. I didn't want to be that. I wanted to be a good jobbing actor, constantly working. When your kind of outlook changes once you leave drama school, because you leave drama school and you are thousands of pounds in debt, and it's really tough, really tough.
Really?
And even just getting an agent is tough, you know, and it takes a lot of dedication, but more importantly than that, it takes a lot of luck. So when you're you throw yourself into it and you think, I'll take everything that comes along, but it's not realistic to do that. So you end up taking the smaller jobs. Now, as I say, these two tours that I got, I can remember people saying to me, this is it for you. This is the start. This is how it starts. Yeah. The first tour I got, people, my agent and my friends were all saying, you're on the way up now. And I said, well, we don't know that. Let's see. But the nice thing about it, like with Drama College, is while you're doing these tours, all you're doing is acting. That's it. You're just traveling around the country and you're acting, and it's great and it's good fun and it's what you want to do. But it's also hard work. 8 shows a week from venue to venue is not easy. It takes a lot out of you.
Well, you're going to say you're putting your heart and soul into it, aren't you, as well?
I think you have to. As I say, that's, you know, I say dedication like it's you must be dedicated to your art. No, what I mean is you have to be willing to say, okay, right now I'm waiting tables in a restaurant, but when that acting job comes along, I won't be. And that's the payoff. You know, that is the payoff. In terms of what was the question again? What was it? The best acting job? Probably the best part I played. And again, this you know, I don't want to. It sounds like everything I'm saying results back to money, but when you do it for 25 years, which is half my life, there's a fine line. There's a fine line, and you really have to weigh up. Can you take the job for no money? Can you do that? Can you do the profit share tour? Can you do that? Because if you do, are you going to have your rent? Are you going to be able to buy food?
If
you've got a family, you know, these sort of things. Fortunately, I never had a family, but you know what I mean. I only had myself to worry about.
Richard. Did you have to take on other work to basically earn a living? Did you have to work on the side? Which I know a lot of actors have to, basically.
I was very, very, again, this was lucky. I'm a bit sort of old fashioned, and this is 20 years ago when you could do this. And I went with my paper CVs and I went round all of London, but in particular the West End. And I handed out my CVs to theatres, to cinemas, to shops, everywhere. And I got a couple of interviews, and I ended up working in the West End, first as an usher, and eventually I became a theatre fireman. I've done that for the last 20 years and thrown, you know, there's been acting jobs in between it.
So you're still working around the industry, which is great, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a bit like the Hollywood waiter thing, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. It very much is. You have to bear in mind, I can remember doing a show a good few years back now, must be 15 years back now. And it was a little lunchtime piece of theatre that people could go and see from the offices that were around the small theatre. They could go and see it in their lunchtime, in their lunch breaks.
Mm.
And while I was on it, I was working with an actor, and he said, "Have you seen this?" And he showed me this article that they put in the Stage where Equity, the Actors Union, had done a bit of research into how much the average actor will be working and how much they'll be earning and things like that. They're basic statistics for the average year. And it turned out that the average actor in London works for 2 weeks of every year as an actor.
Really? Wow. That is incredible, isn't it?
You can't do 50 weeks a year with no money coming in.
That's a perspective.
Unless you're a rich parent, or you won the lottery. Yeah. It's not realistic.
When you were talking about that was the best, would you say that's your sort of the most fun part you've ever had acting in on that tour?
Well, that was great because it was a big ensemble cast. It had a few famous names in it, and I had a lot of fun with it. But again, the real, I'd say that the role I had that was probably the most satisfying was a Southend writer, a friend of mine, had written a play. He's written several. He's had a few plays in the West End, and he wrote one set in Southend, set in a phone store, in a mobile phone store in Southend, And he'd written a part for me, and it was lovely. It was a great part. But when I read the script, I had to take him to one side and said, "It's a fantastic part." I said, "But I don't want to play this guy. I want to play this guy because that's the challenge. That's the difference. This is a guy I know, and I feel like I can play him." And he said, "I really want you to play the guy that I wrote." And I said, can I audition for both? So I met the director and I auditioned for both parts. And the guy that I wanted to play was Simon. And as I left, the director turned to his AD and said, "That's my Simon."
Wow.
And so that was great. It was really...
He called it right.
It was just very, very encouraging. And I felt, okay, this is something I can have a go at. And it was a great part for me. I got some lovely responses in the reviews and things like that. Got some really nice feedback. It didn't do very well. We didn't end up extending or anything like that. And it was another profit share job. And I'd had to leave my job to do it. Wow. And I'd say to do that role, which I will say was, as I say, probably the most satisfying role I've ever done, it cost me about $2,000 to do it.
Really?
The truth of acting for most 90% of people.
You can't go into this industry with your eyes closed. You really have to know what you're letting yourself in for because it's a beast. It's a beast. And I would actually say, I think in a lot of ways it's getting worse for that. You know, it is getting worse for that. I've spent the last 4 or 5 years thinking, is this it? Am I coming out of the industry now? Especially now with COVID, of course, and everything that's happened there, it does make you wonder what kind of an industry we're going to go back into.
See, there was Wayne and I dreaming of becoming actors, and you've just completely
shattered it for them. Yeah,
completely doused our fire, Richard. I know.
There's two answers to the question. There was also another role, which this might convince people otherwise. This might convince them that it is worth doing. And this was something I don't know why I went for this part, but I think actually my flatmate convinced me. Yes, he did. My flatmate convinced me. And I went to audition for a part where I had to sing. I don't like to sing. I can sing, but I don't enjoy it. I knew I was going to have to sing in the part, and I was like, oh God, what am I doing? And I went along, but I knew it could be fun, and I knew I could have some fun with it. And I got the part, and I again did it for about a month over one Christmas. It was an adult anti-panto.
I was going to say adult entertainment then. I was going to say, we've probably seen it.
Hold on.
Yeah.
There's a whole different CV for that. There's a whole different CV.
sorry, Richard.
I got to play a character called Barbara Ugly, one of the Ugly sisters. And I played her as this dragged up northern comic, really heavy makeup. And it was, she was very much like this all the time, talking like this. you know, oh, I've had him. I want to order. I've had him. You know,
why do I think that Jim Davidson is involved in this somewhere?
I was thinking more Jack from Coronation Street. Is that, yeah. Yeah. Jack and Vera, Jack
Duckworth. That's, you know, that's the whole kind of legit side of theatre. You know, when you're working with your Jim Davis, when you know the show's going to run and run. You know, but again, that was just immense fun because I was working with a bunch of people in an ensemble. Everyone was having fun with it. It was fringe theatre as well, so technically things would go wrong and you just had to roll with it. And it was just great,
really.
Roll with it.
Let's just see where we end up. Yeah.
No, but that's fine because you've given a perspective of it's not all doom and gloom, which, you know, I think people need to know it is a hard work out there. You're going to have to take other jobs. You know, we don't just jump into being an A-lister, you know, never. No. It's very few and far between. It's like becoming a professional footballer and playing for a pub team, isn't it? It's the same kind of thing.
Avoid injury, isn't it? Yeah.
But you might not want to answer this one, Richard, but... And it's a bit unfair to ask, really, but it's Trevor's question, not mine. No, but nicest and not so nicest of the, you know, these sort of famous people you've met through the years.
Okay, well, I'm gonna start with if I may, a couple of the nicest because I know you guys like me, and we discussed it. Huge Star Wars fans, and across the years, I've met a couple of people from Star Wars. But one of the nicest things that happened to me was I was working at the theatre, and we had a show in with a guy that turned up at stage door once, and I'd never met him. He was in the show, and he turned up, and I was very excited to meet him because I was thinking this is great, this is such a cool guy to meet. And he walked up to stage door while I'm standing with a friend who's also a huge Star Wars fan. And he just walked up and he said, "Oh, now this guy I know," and pointed right at me. And I was like, you absolutely don't. You really, we've never met. I promise you. I would have remembered you. And he said, "No, I definitely know you. I definitely know you." And I said, I'm sorry. And I got chatting to him, and it was Bill Hookins, who played Porkins in Star. And he was the nicest guy. He was just... lovely, really? Adorable. So friendly. And the sad thing is, obviously, he did die a few years later. But when we got chatting, he said to me, when we get out for a drink, I was talking to him about Star Wars and Raiders and everything. When we get out for a drink, he said, "I'll tell you the story of how I got the job on Raiders. You'll like that." And I never got to hear the story. Never.
Oh,
God,
sure. Listeners would have liked to hear that story. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he was adorable. He was a really nice guy.
Now the bit I want to know, who's the worst, Richard?
Right, okay.
Well, because he doesn't want to work with that one. He just wants to get him out of the way.
there have been some. This is another thing. You will going into the acting industry, you have to have your eyes open, and. Yeah. You will meet some absolute horror shows. You really will. You will meet some people who are just, you think, how do you find a door to get out the house in the morning? You're that stupid. I don't understand it. You know? But there's also people that are just so arrogant, you know, so horribly. I'm all for a bit. My big failing as an actor, as a human being, is a lack of confidence. I never really. I've got horrible, horrible imposter syndrome. Terrible, really bad. You know, I've especially working class guy from Essex stepping on the stage at a West End theatre. What are you doing? You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, you know?
You're doing Essex Boys, Richard. That's what you're doing.
Essex Boys, exactly. Yeah, the stage play. Yeah. I worked with this guy, and we did this show. I'm not going to give a name.
Give us that name.
Do you know what? The nice thing is, if I gave you the name, you wouldn't know him. So that's nice. Sure. For me, that's really nice. Do I sound horribly bitter? I'm sorry.
No, that's right. That's good. That's how I feel.
We just, from day one, I sensed a... that he didn't like me, and I'm the kind of guy I make effort with people. I think, you know, yeah, it's much better, especially if you're working with people, it's much better to try and get on with them.
Definitely.
than to be a dick about it. Excuse my French.
That's okay. We can get away with that one.
That's all right. We'll get away with
it. We can still get in the kiddies section with that.
I could have meant anything by that.
Exactly.
I could have meant my own.
Richard. Yeah, exactly. And most importantly, Richard, because you're not going to give us that name, because obviously no one will know, but so Trev can't avoid him in the acting circles that he's going to be mixing in.
I honestly couldn't. I will say the reason it came to a head, I will say this, it came to a head in a moment we were in our dressing rooms for the first time, and me being me, as I say, I'm kind of a communal team player. I like to keep things nice and friendly. And I said to the whole room, I said, look, guys, just so we know, you know, we're all in this dressing room for the duration of the show. Does anyone have any things they, you know, like to avoid? You know, no smelly food, no bringing a guest backstage without checking with us first, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Which you're like a counter diva, Richard.
Counter
diva.
That's a better name for it. A counter diva.
At the risk of sounding like I'm blowing my own trumpet, I have had many technical people who have a real disdain for most actors say to me in the past, many, many times on many, many shows, have said to me, "You're the most un-actorly actor I've ever met."
And I'm like, hey,
you leave your entourage at home.
Yeah. Oh, thanks so much, guys. That means so much to me. but this guy, he didn't give anyone else a chance to speak. He just and I will say this now, and I know there are a few people out there who I've told this story to, and when they hear this, they will laugh, because this has become a catchphrase. He said, "I demand respect."
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
This is what Trev does to me.
The room, like, just that, it went quiet. Everyone went, what? You know, and I said,
he might as well just shouted from the top of his voice, "I'm an absolute a-hole, mightn't he?"
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
Let's just get
pretty
it out of the open. Let's not beat around the bush. I'm a good a-hole. There you go. I had to
explain to him. I said, "But I do not understand that purely by asking that question, I'm showing respect."
Yeah.
That's the first thing.
Yeah,
and
exactly,
secondly,
yeah,
I think as you go through life, good luck demanding respect from people.
Yeah,
you have to earn it.
Yeah.
You have to earn it, mate. Yeah. That's, you know, and it was, you know, like I say, you're not going to want to sleep with everyone you work with, are you? You know, so.
You speak for yourself. I work in a ball stall full of men. I love it. But,
and you love it, Wally. Yeah. That's the thing.
Sorry, boys. You'll be worried. You'd be asleep next time I walk in that room, wouldn't you? But
the truth is out there.
Where am I going with this? Sorry, but yeah, on to the next one. To Richard, basically, the most important part of all of this, to anyone who's listening out there who has aspirations to be an actor, what advice would you give to someone starting out who has passions to be an actor? It could be somebody our age, you know, somebody wants to start acting. What would you say to them?
My advice, and I think this would be, I've told this to many people throughout my years of doing it, I've always said the same thing: if you think you've got it in you, go for it, because it's so much better than hiding your light under a bushel. It's so much better than keeping that flame. You've got to feed that flame. You can't try and extinguish it before it's had a chance to burn. You've got to at least give it a go.
Would you say, Richard, that you know, somebody's interested, maybe our age, that, you know, if you've got a passion for acting, it's not necessarily going to pay your bills, but go and join an amateur dramatic society and enjoy the process. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot. I've actually done a lot of work since graduating and since being in the industry. I've done quite a lot of work, and it was knock-on work. There would always be a film after a film after a film with Southend College. I'm not sponsored by Southend College. I should just throw it out.
For a past episode, that's like Tip Top and Trev. But
But I've worked. Sorry, go on.
No, very quickly, when you say, like, for someone of our ages, would you say that, like, joining a sort of casting thing for extras would help? Is that a good thing?
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. I tell you what it would do. This is why I was saying about the South End College things, because you might get a part in a small film, but you actually can act. If you go into being an extra or a background artist, as they like to be called, if you do something like that, there's a lot of waiting around. There's a lot of standing on set. You're the first people on set. You're the last people off. The last ones to get fed. There's not always a lot of respect.
Can you eat for free, Richard? You just said that.
You can. There is eating for free. Which is a huge thing.
You're going to get loads of offers now, Richard. Yeah, loads of offers. All free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nothing paid. But what you can do with that is you can find your way in. There might be someone who's got a nice, decent little role. It could be like a couple of lines, but it could give you something to work with that would give you an idea if you feel, you know, it would test you. That's the important thing, I think, maybe to throw yourself into it and test yourself. There's absolutely, as I say, I mean, a lot of people have gone through the extra route. A few friends of mine have ended up again, I keep going back to it, but Star Wars movies through being extras, you know, and it can happen.
Oh, okay.
I would personally, if you really want to test yourself, I would try and find a way into doing student films or short productions of plays, you know, one or two nights in a play somewhere, and test yourself like that, because you'll find out quick enough if you've got it, you know, and it's not, there's very little to do. People always talk about talented actors, but I really believe, really truly believe that most actors are talented. To an extent, most of them can do certain things, but what it is having that opportunity, being given that lucky moment that says this is the perfect role for you, go off and do it, you know.
I noticed amongst all that, Richard, that you mentioned the word test quite a few times, and just because of that,
I hope that somebody out there gets something from it, and it's not just me boring people.
No,
and
no.
And name dropping. Terrible name. I mean, Bill Hookins, for God's sake.
Damn Bill Hookins. But before you go, Richard, because I can tell that you're thinking, what's he going to do now?
I'm a little frightened.
We obviously, quite a popular part of the show that we do is the Test Trev segment, where I put Trev under the spotlight every week. So now we're changing it to Test the Guest.
Oh my God.
But we're going to let Trev join you on this little journey.
Can I still be part of it?
You can be part of it. Yes. Don't worry. You're not left out. Your name's not in the jingle anymore, unfortunately, Trev. And here it is. Test the guest. That was all Trev's idea.
I love that. I've got to say, Trev, I'm coming for your job, mate. I'm coming for your job.
I had to basically put this together at very short notice. And to be honest, even though we've been speaking during this podcast, I managed to answer all the questions correctly, even without concentrating on them. So I don't think this is going to be much of a challenge, to be honest. But let's see.
If this don't go well, Richard, then we do look a complete pair of dumbasses.
Yeah, you know that. So that's fine. That's why I ask the questions.
And this podcast getting thrown in the bin because he clearly didn't.
Never. That's the idea. There's no editing here.
Exactly.
So this is a Harrison Ford. We've mentioned Harrison Ford in the podcast, Richard. So obviously subject. So I'll switch it between you on the answers. So I think I'll go Richard the first one. And they say this isn't too challenging, Richard. Oh, I shouldn't say that really, because if you don't know it, then it's going to look like you're that's
like
awful,
idiot.
Isn't it? Yeah. Sorry.
Well done,
I'm not going to be the next Bruce Forsyth, that's for sure.
Well,
good game. Who was the actress that Harrison Ford fell in love with in the movie Witness? Do you want the multiple choices, Richard? Demi Moore, Kelly McGillis, Jodie Foster, or Kelly Clarkson?
If he doesn't get it, do I get a chance to answer?
Yes, you get it. Like a kid with a candy bar, aren't he?
I'm going to go with McGillis.
Oh,
yeah.
You get the famous round of applause.
Oh, this is it.
because I actually got the buttons right.
Now. That's the highlight.
Yes, sir.
Exactly. I'm the only one that's ever had that, and now you've taken it from me.
I know Trevor's going to get this. This is really annoys me because I feel like asking him what was Garry Kasparov's middle name and just throwing a curveball at him. But we've done Eugenika Bolokov before, haven't we?
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm going to get this. Is just a gimme, really. In Air Force One, who was the terrorist? And you don't even want the answers, do you? Go on.
Give me a couple of seconds to think it over.
You haven't got a couple of seconds, is it?
Gary Oldman.
It was indeed Gary Oldman.
I'm impressed. With that. I've got to say, just to throw this out there again, that Gary Oldman, I went to the same drama college as him. Just saying.
Look at that.
Just throwing it out there.
Extra value.
So, yeah. Back to Richard.
All the details.
Back to Richard.
Okay, here we go.
Harrison Ford took over the role of, this is the one I couldn't remember earlier, I thought it was Jack Dance, it's Jack Ryan, but I did know that, honestly, from which Hunt for Red October actor? I will give you the multiple choice because there's a few.
I don't need it.
Excellent.
Alec Baldwin.
Look at that. This is how we like a quiz to run. This is all
horrible moment there. I thought it wasn't him, but you know, that's all right. That's okay.
No, I like the flashiness of not needing the answers.
Was Alec Baldwin? Did you say Alec Baldwin?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. I would have got that as well.
Excellent.
I know you would. No doubt.
You'll know this anyway. Trevor, know this. But I say this is a bit tougher, maybe. Which movie was Harrison Ford in before Star Wars? Do you want the answers?
No.
Go on then.
Richard knows it. I can hear it in his breath.
It was a sharp intake of breath there, wasn't it? Yeah, definitely.
American Graffiti.
Very good.
I just really want to do this to you, Triv. I really want to do that to you.
To be honest, it will happen again.
Yeah,
it will. It's not going to be like, it will happen again.
And because it's called Test the Guest, really, and Trev's getting too excited, the last one, this is the last question to Richard.
I'm going to throw it so I get that sound. You know that, don't you? I'm going to throw this one just so I get that sound.
If you say something funny, Richard, you get a rim shot, which can be taken any way you like. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Richard, I've never got a rim shot.
No.
No one told me about that.
This podcast has gone downhill rapidly. So question five and the final question. How did Harrison Ford get the role in Star Wars? I'll give you the answers, Richard. You do need them on this one, do you?
I think I know, but yeah, go on. Yeah.
Well, I'm not being funny. I mean,
he's building suspense. He knows it.
A, college friends of George Lucas. B, met George Lucas on American Graffiti. C, met Mark Hamill in a calf. D, met George Lucas on Johnny Carson.
Can I answer it and then ask you guys a question? Because there's a follow-up question.
Go on.
I'm sorry.
I've been that holding on to this one. It was the American Graffiti.
Hey.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you reckon Mark Hamill would have had in a cab?
Of course. Would he have had the black pudding or not? Would he have had it?
I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think of a false pun, but I can't think of one. I'm sorry. There's nothing going. It's terrible. I feel like I've let you down there. A bit awful.
But sorry, go on, Richard. You do your question.
The follow-up question. I can't think of anything, so I'm going to go. This is Quiz Quain. How's that sound?
That's right.
That's the best I can come up with.
Called a lot worse. Yeah.
What actor did Harrison Ford replace as Han Solo?
Oh, it's Tom Selleck, was it?
No.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I've out-quizzed you. I'm so delighted. Now, apparently, George Lucas originally cast Glenn Turman to play Han Solo, and then Harrison Ford, he met him and changed his mind.
It's a whole different movie. So this is for us.
Do you know, Wayne, very quickly, do you know who Glenn Turman is?
What are you doing? Yeah. No, oh, this isn't an elaboration on questions. It's like, say, do you know Grant Thurman's blooming favourite song? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. We could be here a while.
No, no, I don't. Oh, right, that's all right then. I don't either then. Yeah, okay. But, I don't even, but yeah, that's what I mean. But it would have been a whole different movie, that's for sure. But
it would.
Yes. But there you go. We, yeah. I think we better put a disclaimer in to all these guests future coming, because Richard's put a curveball in there that they mustn't ask the guest questions, especially when we don't know the answer. Only if we have the answer.
So delighted. I'm yeah, so delighted. Great. I really, it's really it.
I think this is the first one that's going to need editing, I think. But we'll have to see. Clever editing. Oh, Glenn Turner. Yeah, I know that one. Yeah, I've got it. I've got it.
Oh, well, but, good old Glenn.
Yeah, good old Glenn. Glenn. We loved old Glennie. We both did.
We loved it.
Yeah. Glenn, yeah. Do you know what? If I sent you a picture of Glenn Turner, you'd go, oh, him? You would. You'd totally know.
I would probably be doing, yeah. Yeah. He's probably like some like Treat Williams or something. Yeah. But, yeah, no, that's great. That's the end of that segment, the interview. Richard, we really appreciate your time coming on here today.
Coming down, Richard.
It's been great.
I appreciate
really
you having me on, guys. It's been an absolute blast. It
that's
really
brilliant.
Has.
Thanks
really
very much. We hope you enjoyed that interview. I really enjoyed it. I know Trev really enjoyed it. But what's it made you think about becoming an A-lister, Trev?
It's really opened my eyes to how hard someone in Richard's position has to work to do what he does. To be honest, it's totally blown my ideas of stardom right out of the water.
That's a shame.
These ideas of having my hands in the old cement on Hollywood Boulevard with a star on the pavement. I can't see my name being on that, to be honest, because I'm a lazy sod. And I don't want to work that hard for it.
He's not interested in the casting couch. Well, you're not interested in that either? Not get it the easy way?
In that. Well, yes. Yeah. To be honest, if anybody wants to hire Wayne and I as extras, so we can eat for free on the day, and basically we can stand there and just look pretty, then I'm down with that. But just don't ask me to work as hard as Richard has done in his lifetime.
So thank you, Richard, for putting us off our dreams of becoming actors.
Yeah,
but, at least the truth is out there. I mean, this is all backs
at
off.
At least we realise.
Well, at least we realise now. I mean, Trevor and I, a quick story before we end today, put our names down. I think it was an early crowdfunding project in the late 90s. We got, I don't know where it come from, a movie magazine or something that Trev used to get.
I think and it was, yeah.
It was. Movie, whatever it was. And it come from and said, do you want to be in a British production with Sean Pertwee? And it was called Legionnaires. It wasn't The Disease. It was some sort of science fiction.
It turned out really well as well.
Yeah, well, I can't find it anywhere. But you basically paid £200 and you could be an extra in this movie. And Trevor and I were like, we're there, you know. But
exactly,
it looks like we're the only two. I don't think £400 would have really gone a long way in the production. So I think they cancelled the project.
No. I think the funding weren't that.
But we're still, you know, available for that. We have put our name down on a company called Mad Dog 2020. That's a drink, isn't it? Mad Dog 2020.
It sounds like an energy drink.
I think that's a drink from the 90s. But
it'd be like really green and syrupy.
It would. But, you know, these kind of apps and that you can use now, if you've got any relevant skills, like Trev's got a beard, you know, when they want a person with a beard, it is in growing that. We've spoke about it. But, you know, if you could always join one of these casting places, put a picture on there, put your skill, especially if you've got skills. Well, I noticed the other day I got the app buzzed and it said, you've been shortlisted for one of the gigs that basically on this as an extra because you can drive. And I thought, how broad a skill is that? About 95% of people can drive.
Very unlike the two I got. One was, could you act like a surgeon? Got your medical skills, and I was like, of course I have. What are you taking for?
Trevor Scissorhands there. Yeah.
I haven't like kind of like Doctor Strange. And the other one was, can you juggle? Okay, well, I've never seen Dustin Hoffman juggle in a movie.
Is that enough qualification? Anyway. But
exactly. But going back to that, if anybody has had an experience as an extra or has an experience at working for a casting company, by all means, leave us a message on the blue microphone button.
Yeah, amlopodcast.com, as it always is. Go to there, please review us if you can, if you've got the time. We always appreciate every all the feedback we get on the podcast.
This is why we keep going.
So that was all about acting. We hope you enjoyed it. We've got another interview next week. We hope you join us on that one, and we'll see you then. So see you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please leave a rating and review and visit our website at www.amlopodcast.com to check out all the links and resources in the show notes. Start living them good times. See you next time.